There is nothing like a butterfly to bring out your inner child. Hi, I'm Jill Najoe. I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today. We're going to be talking about butterflies with our guest, Jack Voigt. He is one of the co-owners of the Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin in Appleton. And we'll be talking about the gardens, what the life of a butterfly is like, and what you need to have a successful butterfly garden yourself. What do you want to know about butterflies? What do you do to attract butterflies to your garden? Join the conversation. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page, and the name is The Larry Mueller Show. I'm sure that you all have some great pictures of butterflies, so please post those up there. We'd love to see them. Jack, thanks for being with us today. I'm sure it's a pretty busy time for you right now.
It certainly is, and I thank you for taking the time to talk about this topic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, who doesn't like butterflies, right?
Absolutely.
So what inspired you to create the Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin?
Well, I think it really happened by circumstance, really, not realizing that I had a butterfly garden or even a butterfly nature center that was on my property. My wife and I bought this property north of Appleton about 30 years ago, and I'm a master gardener, and I enjoy plants, and I didn't realize how beautiful prairie plants were until I discovered what they were on my property. I thought they were just weeds, you know?
Of course. You're not the first one who's made that discovery.
Absolutely. And then my head's been turned to the point where I enjoy being part of a new venture, and that is to create an environment for butterflies and other pollinators in our Wisconsin area.
Sure.
And so 6 years ago, I discovered that I have at least 13 or more different species of butterflies on the property and about 50-some different species of prairie plants, because this was a cornfield 30 years ago, and I just left it go. And boom, now I got a new nature center, a butterfly nature center for the public.
Well, how convenient.
Yes.
When did you open?
We opened, this will be our fourth summer now we're starting.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
So what are the experiences that visitors can expect when they go to the gardens?
Well, a lot of things are there. First of all, we want to encourage people to be more aware of, oh gosh, hold on a minute.
Okay, no problem. Our guest is Jack Voigt. He's the co-owner of the Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin. If you've got any questions about creating a butterfly garden or maybe about butterflies altogether, just give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Back with us, Jack?
I got another line coming in, and for some reason someone's calling me on the other line, and they got cell phones and everything else.
Well, don't they know you're on the radio, Jack?
Probably some people are saying they're going to call Jack. And,
sure.
And people don't realize that when you're on the radio, you can't take messages.
Yes. Okay, well, we're going back to what you can experience when you are at the butterfly gardens.
Okay, again, we have many different species there. In Outagamie County, there's roughly about 40 different species of butterflies. And, of course, some butterflies only are around for about 2 weeks and they die off. And whereas opposed, for example, mourning cloaks and monarchs will be there all summer long. But some other species will be only there for 2 weeks, and then they'll leave and come back next year.
Wow, that is amazing. Now, did you know anything about butterflies before this?
Or was a little bit. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, 13 or 14 years old, I did collect butterflies, and I still have the butterfly collection, by
the
way.
Do you? Oh, wow.
But, of course, a lot of things got in my way in the last 30 years of politics, insurance, and banking, and real estate, and all kind of things. And so I decided to stab at the idea of creating a butterfly gardens for the community.
Right. Now, you've got other things. You've got a maze. Describe that.
Okay. The first thing I did when I got the idea of doing a butterfly gardens is that an individual was doing a corn maze, and I called him, and I said, would you do a butterfly maze for me? He said, sure. So I sent him a PDF file, and he came up with his lawnmower, and with GPS coordinates, he cut in the butterfly maze for me and on the two-acre parcel of land, and that would happen 5 years ago. And so I've been cutting the trails ever since. And in so doing, I also added more prairie plant seeds and things like that into the maize itself, so people can enjoy various type of flowers. It's important that if you want a butterfly garden or a prairie, you need various nectar plants from early spring through late fall to attract butterflies. If you don't have that succession of flowers, prairie flowers for them, they will come in and leave you. But also, very important also, you must have host plants that butterflies will lay their eggs on. And if you don't have the host plant and the nectar plants, you're not going to have much of a butterfly garden.
So certain butterflies like certain host plants, is that correct?
That's correct. Every butterfly species has their own preferred host plant. For example, monarchs love milkweed. In Wisconsin, there's roughly about 10 kinds of different kinds of milkweed plants. So they have a variety of milkweed plants, but they only will lay her eggs, she'll lay her eggs only on milkweed. And, for example, the red admiral, she'll lay her eggs on burning nettle, for example. See, and for example, the black swallowtail, she'll lay her eggs on parsley or dill. See, and so you need those kind of plants in your garden to attract the female, because the male follow along,
right?
And they'll mate shortly, and when they become an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have both the host plant and the nectar plants, and you will have a nice butterfly garden.
And do you have information at the gardens about which plant is good for which species of butterfly?
I have the different species and plants on our webpage, Butterfly Gardens
of
Wisconsin.
Okay, so Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin. And you also have a butterfly house. Now, why don't you talk about that?
Yes, that is like a hoop house or like a greenhouse. It has a shaded cloth, and which means it's water and rain can come through it and water the plants, but also creates a covering so we can contain our different kind of butterfly species inside there. So more than likely, the species that are out in the wild, they don't come to see you. You got to see them.
Yes.
But by having them inside a butterfly house, they will be there, and you have a better chance of identifying various types of butterflies.
Okay. Where do your butterflies come from?
Well, initially, I started out late spring by getting monarchs, for example, from Florida or from Texas.
Okay.
And then morning cloaks and painted ladies. That's what I call my seed. And then I also have a butterfly lab, too, which we now are producing various types of species in the lab, so that we don't, you know, in the wild, about 5% of the butterflies that are eggs that are laid become adults. And so it's difficult for many species to have a large population,
mm-hmm.
because of the predators and diseases that various things happen to them in the 30 days from egg to adult stage. They will become an adult.
Right, because they do feed a lot of other critters too, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. There's parasites. For example, the monarch butterfly is attacked by a parasite called OE. And also, not only that, there's parasite. There is also the various predators such as wasps, ants, and yellow jackets will actually attack and eat the small larvae,
mm-hmm.
or the egg itself.
Wow. And speaking of monarchs, we have Jennifer in Waukesha, and mm-hmm. I think she's got a question for you.
Sure.
Hi, Jennifer. What's your question?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call this afternoon.
Absolutely.
I heard that, you know, he's been talking a lot about monarch butterflies as it is, and I have a special fondness for them. I was the first butterfly I learned to identify, and it was always a thrill whenever one fluttered into the garden. My question is, I remember hearing that their numbers were seriously on the decline for quite a while, and it kind of looked like, you know, there may not be monarchs anymore, you know, in our area. And I have been seeing them around a little bit, but I was wondering if you know where they are on their, you know, way towards recovery, or if they are on their way towards recovery.
Well, we thought the recovery was in place last year a little bit. We're down about between 95 and 90% reduction of numbers. At one time, in 1996, there were about a billion monarchs in Mexico. But since then, they've been down to about 35 million monarchs. And they increased a small amount last year. But this year, I've had a lot of reports, including even my own gardens, that monarchs are down again this year. I believe there's a huge storm that came through when they migrate back north out of Mexico in March or early April. There was a terrible storm that killed millions and millions of monarchs on the way north, I guess, in the spring. So therefore, the population, again, I think is down. I hope not, but it all depends upon what came north and if they would be able to survive the various predators and the diseases, and we will have another good recovery. But it doesn't look all that promising.
Okay, Jennifer, thank you very much for calling in. Now, monarchs are, you do some great things with monarchs at the gardens. Jack, mm-hmm. What are some of the programs that you have going on there?
Well, again, early spring we do, as I said, we have a butterfly lab. We allow people to take them home if they want to buy a chrysalis or a caterpillar, and they can create their own backyard
really?
Butterfly gardens with,
wow.
with the, pardon me?
I said, wow, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. And also in the fall, we have a thing called Monarch Migration Days. We're going to extend that from days to a few weeks where we will allow the public to come in and test and tag and release monarchs to Mexico. But a lot of people don't realize that the monarch only lives about two or three weeks only after it becomes an adult, except the last generation, there's roughly about five generations from spring through fall. Every 30 days they reproduce, and those monarchs will actually die. It's the monarchs that are born sort of end of August, for example, and they what happens there at that end of August, they make create a situation where it's called diapause, which means that the temperatures of the is lower, and also the sun's rays are lower. So that induces diapause that stops the mating process. So if you were a monarch and was not mated, more than likely you'd be flying to Mexico. But if the male and female mated and during the end of August, you'll probably stay in this area and die in this area. But most people don't realize that unmated monarchs will fly to Mexico. And they will come back to Texas and Oklahoma and mate, and they will die there in Texas, for example, and their offspring will come back to the Midwest and start reproducing the cycle. Usually it's between four and five generations later that they will live 7 or 8 months, but the other generation is only about 30 days or less.
That's fascinating. I don't think many people even realize that.
Yeah, that's true. And the same thing happens that there's roughly about three different kinds of population of monarchs, for example. There is the Midwest population. There's also the southern Florida that they actually stay in Florida or go to Cuba. And the other ones is the western states. They will migrate to Southern California. So monarchs that are born or raised west of the Rockies will stay west of the Rockies, and the ones that are east of the Rockies will fly towards, if they have not mated, they will fly towards Mexico. But it's been a situation a few times where some of these monarchs that fly to Mexico by November, some actually get distracted or winds or something blow them into California. So they've been tagged.
Okay, well, Jack, you know what? We're going to need to break for news real quick. So our guest is Jack Voigt. He's the co-owner of the Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Stay with us. We'll be right back after the news. We're talking about two of my favorite things today, butterflies and gardens. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for listening on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Jack Voigt, and he is the co-owner of the Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin. Do you have a butterfly garden? Excuse me. What kind of butterflies do you see in your backyard? We'd love to hear from you, so give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post your comments or pictures on our Facebook page, and I see we have some really beautiful ones of butterflies up there. Jack, thank you so much for sticking around with us. And I sort of interrupted you in the middle of your answer about monarchs. What else were you going to tell us?
Oh, gosh.
So much, I know.
There is so much about monarchs. I mean, really, they are, again, I'd like to suggest that, you know, the state of Wisconsin doesn't have a butterfly, a state butterfly. And I'd like to suggest that we have a state butterfly. I had a bill pending in the legislature, but didn't get passed. And that I think the monarch should be our state butterfly. And also, I got a congressman, Reed Ribble, is working on it in the state level, I mean, at the national level, possibly, to make, you know, we have the bison is the mammal, whatever it is, of the nation, but
sure.
We have a national butterfly, but as the monarch, for example. The monarch is in every state in the union except for in Canada. There's actually monarchs in Hawaii, but not in Alaska, though.
Not in Alaska. Well, it's
no.
A little chilly. That's a long trip.
That's a long migration trip. But
Well, you know, we had Wanda from Rhinelander call in to ask, how do the offspring of those monarchs that migrate to Mexico, how did they know how to travel back to Wisconsin or wherever they were supposed to go?
Well, again, their offspring, that's a real mystery. I mean, again, every fifth generation flies to Mexico, which means four of the generations never made it to Mexico. Of course, they die in this area here in the Midwest. So nobody knows really the real mystery, because when they fly together as groups as well, and along the way they pick up their other relatives along the way, and for some reason they almost all congregate together the first week in November. In Mexico, on an acre, about 10 acres of land west of Mexico City. And how do they know exactly where they go every year to the same spot, basically?
Right.
And
what a mystery.
Again, their offspring in the spring come back to the Midwest. How do they know that? I guess at one time, millions of years ago, monarchs were actually, that were they inhibit, and their habitat was Mexico. And as the earth warmed in the northern climates, they kept on going north, farther north and farther north, and they also began to realize that they could not survive the cold temperatures, so they had to migrate. So monarchs migrate, and other butterflies do not migrate. They will actually stay in place as an adult over winter, or their eggs or their caterpillars or chrysalis will overwinter, and they become adults again next spring, see, where monarchs don't do that.
Now, are monarchs the only ones that migrate like that?
That distance, yes. But, okay. For example, there's a giant swallowtail, and that migrates north in the summertime from Tennessee and Kentucky and Georgia and places like that. The giant swallowtail will come to Wisconsin if the proper winds will come. And, you need the proper nectar, the proper host plant to do so. To attract that particular, that's the largest species of butterflies in the United States, is the giant swallowtail.
That's a special one to see.
Yeah, it is.
Have you had any at your gardens?
I saw one.
Really?
Yeah, but that's the last, only one in 3 years. And
not
I don't know.
Great odds.
It's a unique sight. It's an awesome sight to see that type of large type of butterfly.
Right. Now, we've been talking a lot about the butterflies, and let's talk a little bit about the garden itself. Now, what kind of plants do you have in your garden?
Well, again, I have both host and nectar plants.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that will bloom from spring through fall, and I think it's important that people have those kind of nectar plants, because monarchs, for example, and other butterflies rely upon the nectar to survive. And one plant I really like a lot, and it's called the Meadow Blazing Star. It's part of the Liatris family. But it has, for some reason, some type of pheromones in the flower that attract butterflies from a mile away. And you'll get monarchs, but also not only monarchs, but other types of butterflies will come to that flower. And it blooms for between 3 and 4 weeks, late August to mid-August to September. But again, you need coneflower, you need wild bergamot, you need, I think, sweet black-eyed Susan, which is a perennial, goldenrod, and New England aster. But these are all plants that bloom at different times of the year. And
they're all natives, too.
They're
right?
All native. Mm-hmm. But an interesting thing I noticed is that, you know, you have plants in your backyard, and goodness gracious, the rabbits love those kind of plants.
Yes,
but
they do.
They don't really eat prairie plants. I've never seen a very few prairie plants that have been eaten by rabbits. I have rabbits out there, but they don't really attack the milkweed because, again, I guess it's very very painful if you bite into a milkweed plant. They've learned their lesson that not to eat that kind of plant. So they don't touch a lot of prairie plants.
Well, it makes sense. The ecosystem needs to be balanced, so that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Let's go to Green Bay. She had Anne in Green Bay has a question for you, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Anne.
Yes, Jack.
Oh, hello.
I'm just wondering if, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you now. You just cut out a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering if you could address how pesticides are affecting the butterfly population, and also if you have volunteerism at your location and what people could do to help out if they would like to volunteer there.
Oh, that's a great question. I appreciate the... Are you planning to volunteer?
she dropped off.
Oh, she dropped off.
Yeah.
Okay. When the pesticide is dangerous, it's called Roundup. What's happened is that soybeans and corn is being sprayed by various pesticides from Monsanto, and which kills the milkweed, for example, but doesn't kill the crop. And so more and more crops are being raised with those kind of pesticides. And it's important that even we have bees at our place too. So, I mean, pollinators are also affected by these pesticides. And it's important that we don't have an imbalance of these type of things that are occurring that is in our environment. And certainly it's important. I'm a master gardener of organic gardening, and I think we should promote that as a way of having a better garden in your backyard. But pesticides is a problem, especially crops that are growing that will rely upon the removal of, they say, weeds are the native species, and we need to contain ourselves from doing so.
Right. A weed is just a plant, a flower in the wrong spot, right? Isn't
That's
that what
correct.
They say?
Mm-hmm.
okay, let's go to Kathy in Pewaukee. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. I grew up on a farm in Pewaukee, on a dairy farm, and every autumn we would go back to our backwoods, and there would be a couple of trees that were just covered with monarch butterflies. It was just amazing to see thousands of butterflies and to wonder how in the world did they know to come there every year. So, and that would have been probably in the 50s and early 60s.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do, for example, monarchs that are leave us in mid-summer, they will fly to also Canada and reproduce in Canada, and then you get the migration back through Wisconsin from Canada. And what happens at the end of August, you'll see the congregations of these monarchs will actually come back in the same area. I think for some reason, their predecessor, for example, their relatives from last year and years in the past, have somewhat probably have created some type of pheromone or something on the tree that was there, and they can somehow hone into where their relatives have been in the past, and that's where they'll fly to in the fall, and also they will congregate in towards the evening, and they will stay there overnight. And the next morning, they will fly, take off again. And so monarchs don't fly in the nighttime. They only fly in the daytime because they need that sunlight to raise to be the energy for their flight. But you have a unique situation where you have had that. And I don't know if you've been back there or not, but more than likely, they will congregate there every year on that particular tree.
Have you been back, Kathy?
Oh, I'm not sure that the tree is still there. WCTC is built there. There's a fire station and there's a subdivision. So I haven't been back there, but this fall I will go look.
Well, let us know, okay?
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
You can go there towards the end of August, early September. That's where they'll congregate. And they may only be there for a day. And that's the thing is that they'll continue their flight. So you had an opportunity only one time in probably a lifetime to see this. And they don't stay there more than one day. They'll take off because they'll fly between 30 and 50 miles a day. So that this is their way of stopping by, and again, next day they'll take off.
Amazing. Well, good luck with that, Kathy. We got an email from Jim, and he said that he planted some milkweed seed last fall, a quarter of an inch deep or less, but he hasn't seen anything yet. Is there a specific requirement for growing milkweed, Jack?
Well, yes. I mean, for example, the common milkweed likes disturbed soil, and that's the reason why you may not get the common milkweed in your backyard. And also, if it's a prairie milkweed, there's so many different kinds of milkweed. Now, if he has a milkweed plant, that it depends upon the soil. If it's clay soil, you'd probably, in wet, you need the red milkweed or the marsh milkweed. But there's also a thing called butterfly milkweed, which is a smaller plant that likes to be in sandy soil. So you have to find out what kind of soil you have and then plant that kind of seed. If you don't, you will not have any results from a planting. Also, the milkweed seeds need to be scarred over winter, and if it's been too protected, it will not grow the next year. So I don't know what happened there with his situation, but planting it a quarter inch maybe is all okay. A lot of times you just spread the seeds on the soil, and the rain will actually drive the seed into the cracks of the soil, and they'll come up almost automatically.
So let nature take its course, right?
That's what happened with prairie plants. Millions of years they've survived because of not being planted by humans, of course.
Right. Okay, well, let's go to Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question?
I do. So I planted a whole bunch of milkweed in my flower gardens the past couple years, and this year they're just growing prolifically everywhere. Which is fantastic. I was hoping to have the monarchs come back, but so far I haven't seen a single monarch yet this year. And I was wondering if you could tell me if there's any kind of scent or if there's any way I could use as an attractant, or maybe I need to cover them during storms. If there's something I can do to help draw more monarchs in. And then what you were just talking about with the different varieties of milkweed, could you possibly do just a quick, brief visual description of the types of milkweed? Because mine came in naturally from the farm fields across the road, and then I just have been slowly propagating them and keeping them going in the yard.
Well, again, the common milkweed plant usually will produce clusters of ball of clusters of roughly the size of a tennis ball or bigger, and it's mostly reddish pink, and they're rather fragrant, of course, but their leaves are real leathery and thick. Now, you probably have the common milkweed plant in your backyard, I assume, because that doesn't behave itself. I mean, it goes meanders all around the place, where the prairie red or swamp milkweed actually behaves itself like a peony bush. It will be small, and then it keeps on getting larger and larger over a period of time. But it doesn't have rhizomes like the common milkweed would do for you. Now, as I said before, the butterfly milkweed is a plant that's good for sandy soil, and that's what you should plant. But if you plant the marsh milkweed in sandy soil, it's going to not live. And so people like that should realize they should take notice of what kind of soil they have and then plant accordingly to the soil of the milkweed you may want in your backyard. There's also tropical milkweed, and there's also another plant called hairy balls milkweed. It's an annual milkweed from Florida. It's a very nice plant, but doesn't come back each year. So you have to replant it every spring, or in the greenhouse prior to the last frost in the springtime, to have that type of response. But as for attracting monarchs, it's very difficult. I think that's a $64,000 question. How do you attract more butterflies, monarchs in your backyard? They don't behave. They don't hear anything. But,
right.
But
you can't call them.
You can't call them, and it's so difficult. I mean, even my 2-acre butterfly maze, I've only seen 3 wild monarchs back there. I mean, really. So by having our own butterfly lab, I'm able to produce hundreds of monarchs in our lab so people can enjoy seeing the monarchs in our butterfly house. So it's sort of disappointing that I'm hearing a lot of reports they're down this year.
Right. And I know we had talked about that on our show not too long ago, too, about that freeze down in Mexico.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that they thought that it affected them quite as bad as they thought in the beginning. But tomorrow, actually, we do have P.J. Leish back on the show with us. And so maybe we can ask him about that, see what the updates are. So,
sure.
Yeah.
There's also a group I'm a member of. It's called the Southern Wisconsin Butterfly Association. And so they're out of Madison, and my name escapes me who the president is, but maybe I'm going to consider him as a guest sometime else on your program.
Absolutely. We're always looking for good ideas for guests. Mm-hmm. You know, a while back, someone had asked you about volunteering, and I don't think we actually got to answer that question.
Yeah, I got that down. I was going to wrap that up.
Okay.
Certainly, we're open Wednesdays through Saturdays from 10 to 3, and we do have volunteers. We had a group of volunteers that came 2 weeks ago to the gardens, in which created a partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They provided $2,000 of funding for plants, and had about 40 to 50 people come out that particular day and planted various types of nectar and host plants in the butterfly maze. So we're always looking for volunteers, and certainly send us an email at info@butterflygardensinwisconsin if you'd like to volunteer, and we accept volunteers. We appreciate that.
Okay, so that was info@butterflygardensofwisconsin.com. And that's your website, too, right?
Yes. Yeah. The email address is right on our website. So if you get to the website, you can click onto the email address.
Okay. And we didn't get a chance to mention that you actually have an event center there.
That's correct. We are having different events. Initially, we had a wedding reception area. But the county said we need to be commercially zoned, so we're still agriculturally zoned, so we cannot have banquets there, but we do have wedding ceremonies there.
Okay.
So people can have their weddings there as a ceremonial situation, but not as a banquet.
Now, we had mentioned that you're in Appleton. Where about in Appleton are you?
It's real simple. You take Highway 41 north, or wherever you are, to exit 142, which is the road is State Highway 47. You go 2 miles north of 41, and you're right there.
Okay. Well, that seems pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to the gardens in the wintertime?
Well, nature takes over, and everything's shut down. I mean, what happens a lot of times is that the first frost comes in mid-September or later September, and all butterflies basically are gone, are killed by the frost. So that's when we're basically terminating our open house of our butterfly garden.
Okay. We did have an email from Frank in Brookfield, and he was wondering what kind of plants that he should put in his garden to attract those elusive swallowtails.
Well, you mean the one, the big giant one?
I guess so. He just said swallowtails, so I'm not sure which one it was.
Well, again, I guess there is the tiger swallowtail, which is the black and yellow one.
Mm-hmm.
And... oh, gosh. The lion. Sorry, the other lion's busy, too, here. I hope that...
Okay. Well, we're talking to Jack Voigt, who's the co-owner of the Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin, and it's located in Appleton. So which plants are good for those swallowtails, Jack? Oh.
Hello?
Yep.
I'm back.
You're back. Okay. So what plants are good for those swallowtails?
Well, again, you need the host plant, as I said,
mm-hmm.
and we have that on our website. For example, if you want to get the black swallowtail, again, you plant parsley and dill, and even Queen Anne's lace. It's a plant that should not be in your garden probably, because it's a plant that can spread on you. But those kind of plants are host plants, and nectar plants you need. Something that will be a prairie plant that will bloom for 3 weeks or so, and then another plant will come along and take its place for flowering. So you need a succession of flowers. You know, as I said before, in the fall you need the New England aster and also these goldenrods, for example. Midsummer you need the various blazing stars and lazy Susans and wild bergamot are good things, and coneflowers are good in the midsummers. And then the early... in the early spring, you can have, which I haven't seen many butterflies on this year, but Golden Alexander is a beautiful plant. It's also, I've discovered, to be a host plant for the black swallowtail, too. And it looks like almost like dill, but it looks like a relatively like a dill, but it's not. It's actually a prairie plant.
And those are relatively easy to find at most garden centers, aren't they?
I think more and more garden centers are now bringing in prairie plants, you know, because what's happened is that a lot of our beautiful plants, you go to even these, you know, various gardens, rose gardens or other gardens, they have beautiful plants, but the hybridizers of these plants have taken really the nectar out of the flower. Therefore, you won't see a lot of pollinators in those kind of gardens. Like, for example, Borner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee, which I enjoy a lot. But you go to some of these gardens, you won't see any butterflies because these plants have been hybridized to the point the nectar has been taken out of the flower, and therefore the butterflies and bees are not going to be pollinating or visiting those flowers.
Well, Jack, you've given us all kinds of things to think about, and I think you're probably going to have some visitors to your gardens real soon.
I appreciate that. But
sure.
Again, we do appreciate volunteers, and it's been quite an experience. I mean, I'm not a I've never studied entomology, but certainly I'm getting an earful.
Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Jack Voigt, who's the co-owner of the Butterfly Gardens of Wisconsin. It's located in Appleton. You can find more information on their website, butterflygardensofwisconsin.com. Thanks again for coming, Jack. I am Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock, a human rights lawyer and former NPR commentator will join Kathleen Dunn to discuss his new book. Please stay with us. There's more to come.